Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Welcome to Contemporary American History. I'm Professor Turgeson. You know, a lot of people think history is just facts. It's just information about the past. But not me. I mean, I hold history very sacred. Sacred. The way the farmer looks at the earth and he holds it sacred. The way a Christian takes the Bible and he holds it sacred. The way a lot of people hold their marriage sacred. So I feel about it. So why don't we dive right in by interpreting one of the easiest events in the last 20 years of American history. Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnamization to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. And a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in a classroom, hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up to my knees in rice paddies with guns and Edwards going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him while pussies like you were back there partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the goddamn Beatle albums.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you? I mean, these kids, they were in grade school at the time. And me, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Well, I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper. But since you want to help, maybe you can help me, okay? You remember that thing we had about 30 years ago called that Korean conflict? Yeah, where we failed to achieve victory. How come we didn't cross the 38th parallel and push those rice eaters back to the Great Wall of China and take the first brick and nuke them back into the fucking Stone Age River? How come? Tell me why. Say it. Say it.
All right. I'll say it. Because Truman was too much of a pussy wimp to let MacArthur go in there and blow out those commie bastards.
Good answer. Good answer. Like the way you think. I'm going to be watching you.
All right, then. It is 19 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of September in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, the home of quality. Thank you for joining us today. It is Wednesday, September 22nd, 2010. Here's the thing, and I should have anticipated this. Leave it to Sam Kinison to slip something by my internal editor, too. And of all of the clips that I actually didn't... Did you hear him?
No, I
didn't. Mr. Kinison used a bit of profanity
did
just
he?
There. That's right. I'm shocked. I'm not that shocked. So that is Sam Kinison, the late, great Sam Kinison. And back to school, the late, great Rodney Dangerfield as well. I mean, really, there's that sequence in the movie... In the movie Comedian, where Jerry Seinfeld talks about, you know, you wouldn't think that life was long enough and strange enough to ever get to the point where you get to meet Bill Cosby. You wouldn't really think that life was great enough that you actually get a moment where you get to see a movie that has Robert Downey Jr. and Rodney Dangerfield and Sam Kinison and Ned Beatty and Oingo Boingo.
And Kurt Vonnegut.
And Kurt Vonnegut. Hello, I'm Kurt Vonnegut. Looking for Thornton Mellon. Well done. Well remembered on the Kurt Vonnegut, too. It's so totally you and so totally me that that's the guy you remember and that's the guy I forget. And some writer. Some guy. I forget. Forget his name. Kurt Vonnegut's dead, right? He died a long time. Yes?
Yeah, he died a while ago.
I mean, it was not too long after that film, I think, that he finally... or was it?
It was a while after that, but yeah.
I don't even remember. All I remember is reading... I remember the first... We've immediately turned it into book time. I remember the first Kurt Vonnegut book I ever read, which I believe was... Hocus Pocus. Did he also write a book called Slapstick?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm confused. I don't remember which it was. It was either Hocus Pocus or Slapstick, that I read when I was, I think way too young to be reading Kurt Vonnegut books. It was like 11 or something, because I liked the cover. I was at the library and somebody had returned it, and it was sitting on the library, like, you know, put return books here shelf. And I was like, well, that looks amusing. Maybe I'll pick it up and take it home. And I just remember that all throughout the book, everybody is falling victim to this really strange flu, this sort of pandemic. It's kind of sweeping through big sections of humanity. And then it turns out at the end of the book that the flu is in fact caused by inhaling millions of miniaturized Chinese people, because they've developed a sort of shrink-o-matic ray. And many, many millions of Chinese have shrunk themselves so small that they were then blown away by the wind. And so then people around the world were inhaling miniaturized Chinese by like the thousands, and it was giving them a flu. And I remember putting the book down at the end and just thinking to myself, I don't know how I feel about that. I'm sort of amused, but deeply unsettled. So there you go. So that began
which is pretty much the Vonnegut experience.
Right. I mean, it's sort of like it's a tumultuous sort of, this is great and deeply, deeply disturbing. It makes me question all that I thought I knew. Your favorite Kurt Vonnegut book is Cat's Cradle.
It is. Yeah. And that was the first one I ever read, actually.
Tell me I don't know Don Taylor.
Look at you.
That's right.
Why would you know that? Why would you say that?
I know all, Don. I see all. You cannot hide from the great, all-powerful, all-knowing oracle that lurks inside the mind of Rick. You may try, but you will fail. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Coming up later on today, we have Ms. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, who will join us today. She's going to be passing along her own thoughts and observations and telling us about what's in the new issue of Willamette. Also, giving us a little bit of Aaron Mesh's insight into, I don't even remember, what is it? Aaron Mesh reviewed something or other. He reviewed some film that's coming out, and I guess the one where summation is like,
oh,
awful.
The Wall Street
Wall
sequel.
Street 2.
Wall Street Money Never Sleeps.
Money Never Sleeps, which just looks terrible. It just looks like one of the worst things that's ever been made. And here's the thing about that. The original Wall Street is not all that great. You go back and watch the original Wall Street now, there are small sections of that film that I will enjoy watching, but that's the thing where I never watch it live. Is there a movie that you will, I'm just going to ask this right out of the gate, and then I swear to God we won't get behind or bogged down. Is there a movie that you will watch anytime it's on, if you happen to flip by and land on it?
Oh, yeah. There's a couple. Dirty Dancing is one.
Really?
Tombstone is another.
Yes.
Tombstone is quite possibly my favorite movie ever, though I know that it is in many ways quite terrible.
I disagree with that. I think it's in no way quite terrible. I don't think there's anything. Well, we shouldn't get into this conversation.
No,
it's
going to
take up too much time.
Yeah.
It's just,
But okay. I love Tombstone.
Yeah. For me, it's Any Given Sunday, which is, as you might say about Tombstone, Any Given Sunday is a bad movie in a lot of ways. Many Oliver Stone films are terrible if you see them like more than 6 months after they came out.
Yeah.
If you go back and you watch, I would say,
with the exception of The Hand.
The Hand? I don't even know what that is.
The Hand is an early Oliver Stone movie. It's a horror movie starring Michael Caine.
You told me about this, I think, at one point, but I never watched
it. Taken off in a car accident, and then, but it keeps following him around.
You must have been the one, it's not like there would be that many people out there big hand enthusiasts, so you must have been the one to tell me about that.
It may have been me.
I thought the first thing he did was, because he wrote the script for Salvador, and then...
Oh, no, The Hand was before Salvador.
Like, which I guess, yeah, so that would have been in the mid-80s. So, okay, The Hand. I gotta make a note to watch it. Did I tell you that I have at home, but I have not yet watched The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
You still haven't watched that?
I haven't watched The Bride of Frankenstein either. Get off my back!
No, it's fine. It's
the best I can.
If I had known that, because my birthday is coming up this weekend, and I had considered getting one of my friends who has sort of an ad hoc screening room to host some friends to watch with. If I had known you had not seen The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T yet, I would have asked someone to host us as a movie night.
It's probably better that I watch it on my own anyway, because there's been so much pressure put on me by you to watch the film and to love it that I feel like it needs to be a solitary experience now.
Possibly.
Because the thing, like anybody who pressures someone else to watch a film, which I do all the time,
so
I understand.
You don't want to feel like
it.
I'm sitting there watching you throughout the whole thing.
It's not just that. I know that if you... I swear to God, this is the last thing I'll say before we actually get into the meat of the show, because we're already behind. But if you really, really want somebody to watch a film and it's important to you that they watch it, and maybe not even that they have to enjoy it, but you want them to be able to judge it fairly. In other words, if I'm going to like the movie or not, you want it to be on its own merits. If anybody at your party like gets drunk and starts making noise, like you're going to cut
them.
That's
right.
You're going to gouge out their eyes and pull out their tongue.
Yeah, I get like that anyway.
Oh, God. It'll be like when we were at Bobby's house one night, we were at Fat Boy's house, and he was doing one of their drunken commentaries or whatever. And which is fine. But it's like on this particular night, they were doing West Side Story. First of all, I got to tell you, I love West Side Story. I'm a big, and I don't mind saying that. Dancing Gangs, whatever. I'm a fan. I love West Side Story.
I want to hate West Side Story, but, you know, Sondheim and Bernstein. I mean, you can't go wrong.
And also, like, just like the scorching, I was going to say white hot, but the brown hot Rita Moreno, who's just like the hottest thing on two legs. But Scott Daly's girlfriend, Lily, had never seen West Side Story. And, of course, when she said that she had never seen West Side Story, like, every girl in the group was like, oh, you haven't seen West Side Story. It's, you know, it's a beautiful, you know, it's a romance, it's Romeo and Juliet, whatever. And so, you know, building up how great West Side Story is, which it sort of is, but you've been to those things. That is not the environment in which you want to see a movie, especially like West Side Story, for the first time.
No.
And so it was like every time anybody would make any noise, there was just all kinds of and you felt like Bobby's anger just growing throughout the night. Like at any moment, he was just going to go out and he was going to find himself a weed whacker and just come back in and just take care of business. And just put it right through Scott's face. I'll try to get that watched this weekend. Here's what's coming up today. So Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will join us. We'll talk about the new issue. We got the top five coming up. Top five sleaziest songs ever to receive mainstream radio airplay. This is the top five songs ever to receive sleaziest. I'm sorry, top five sleazy songs ever to receive mainstream radio airplay. Clown Watch coming up. Taser Watch. Clergy Watch coming up. And then Dawn Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on your Wednesday.
Good
job, Don. Well done.
You.
Would you like some more vodka?
I have no vodka today. I am completely sober.
Maybe that's the problem.
Eating chowder.
The spiders won't get off.
A survey finds that Americans are increasingly happy with their PCs. The Kindle Reading TriMet driver has been fired once before.
Not to be confused with a hobo humping slobo babe.
And skeletal remains have been found in Beaverton.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Separate from all of that, we also, this is a phrase you don't really think you're going to be using when you wake up some mornings. We're going to be eating some kangaroo jerky today. So we want to thank Kelly and Jules, who came by yesterday. So if you were listening to yesterday's Fun Employment Radio, because Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler taped that very fine program right here in the studio. So if you were listening to Fun Employment Radio yesterday, you heard them talk to Kelly and Jules, who are two listeners from Australia. Now, I know that I think that it's like a 50-50 thing where like one of them is from Hillsborough and I forget which one. Are they both originally from here?
I think they're both originally from here, but from different areas.
And I think they've been in Australia for differing lengths of time. Because his accent is a little more pronounced than hers.
Yeah.
But so they now live in somewhere, Australiaville. And so they were here yesterday and they hung out for a while and they were on with Greg and Sarah. And they brought us just a, and you know, here's the thing. It's like, I know that this comes just a couple days after we talked to the guy from Zurich, Ryan, from the future, who is from Portland, now lives in London, but was in Zurich calling us while walking around, like, the town square in Zurichia with his headset and his Skype, and it was just all weird and freaky. I know intellectually that those things happen, and the people, and he was actually doing it while listening to the show in goddamn Zurich, which is just like, he blows my mind even further. And yet, doesn't it freak you out a little bit yesterday, like when they come into the studio, when we were, you know, meeting his Kelly and Jules from Australia, and, you know, and I'm introducing myself, and they go, oh, no, you know, we're listeners, we subscribe, you know, best show ever, you know, and then they like, and then they recited a bunch of stuff we'd done on the show recently, which should stop surprising me, but it never does.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, also they came in to see, you know, Greg and Sarah, and they say hi to you, and that sort of thing, and I don't expect them to, like, have any idea who I am.
And you are who?
And I'm like, oh, Don, oh, gosh, we love you. We love the show. It's great. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you. Hi there. How you doing? And, yeah, it was. And then Jules, the fella, he's like, oh, yeah, I remember you talking to Rick about how you enjoy Australian television. And you were watching, you know, and he mentions that. And this was like 2 years ago or something that I was on your show and I mentioned that I watched this Australian TV show. And I'm like, God, I don't even remember saying that. And he remembers me saying
it's a strange world. It really is. Yeah. I mean, it's a great time to be alive. This is a I really am. I try to be not to be all corny about it, but I try to be very conscious of the fact that we really are living in like a magical time. I mean,
it really is.
And I know that every generation must feel that because it's like, we've gone to the moon or, you know, or it's like, you know, look, my milk is still cold the next day or whatever it is that passes for technology in a given era. But I mean, I think we have reached some sort of exponential growth point in the technology available to the average consumer. Not to be this guy, but it's like, you know, just like with my iPhone, which just which just terrifies me with the things it can do. I mean, it's just unreal. I have actually reached several points already with that thing where it really kind of freaks me out. And I have to just put my stuff down and walk out of my home office and just go stand outside on the porch for a while and just, you know, and just sort of assess where I am in my life and really the things that we are able to do as a species. It's just mind-boggling. Speaking of which, I have reached that point yesterday. The dread day arrived. I don't even like talking about this because it's so traumatic. So I dropped my iPhone for the first time yesterday. And you know
did
what?
Did you scream like a little girl?
I did. I screamed like a child. I screamed like I had to clutch my petticoat between my knees and run off to the barn. Dancy, something has happened to the pony! I screamed like such a woman that Laura heard me inside and came out. And I did that scream. Well, here's the, first of all, it was my own fault. Yes? You nothing, mock my pain!
I know, I'm just enjoying the visual image.
Oh my God. Well, you know
you,
what I've done.
Of you dancing around and
well, have you,
shrieking.
I mean, look, I don't mean to be insulting, Tom, but it doesn't seem like you could possibly own anything, the dropping of which would cause you any kind of stress at all. I mean,
you don't mean to be insulting by that.
You curse your computer on a daily basis. You got a phone that's from like, I don't know, you got a phone that came in a box of cereal, I think. I mean, do you own anything that is?
Well, if I dropped my laptop, I'd be in a huge amount of trouble.
I guess you'd be upset because you do the show.
My whole world is wrapped
up
in my
laptop. But you know what I'm saying? It's like you don't really you do not own a bright, shiny electronic object at this time in your life that you carry around.
I have had moments in my life though where I have dropped or damaged things that were valuable or had great personal meaning to me, and I've done that just like ah, and then Yes.
I was doing that thing where I'm usually very OCD about packing all my stuff into my shoulder bag, when I leave here. But it's a chain of dork observations here, because
I will say I have already decided when I do finally end up getting the iPhone, which God only knows when that's going to be, because now I need like brake pads for my car.
Yeah.
But when whenever I do get it, one of the first things I'm going to do is yes, I'm going to get the invisible shield like you. But I'm also going to get one of those like rubber bumpers that goes around the outside, because I know I'm just going to drop it.
Well, I will.
I know I will.
I'll just back up one thing and then the other, and then I'll tell the story, and then we'll move on, because this is really just like the most tedious thing probably to most people. But I got to tell you, if people who own a new smartphone, they don't even have to be an iPhone, could be whatever. There is always that countdown until you drop it for the first time, and then after that, it's like the bloom is off the rose, and it's just, and you for good and bad. I mean, you go, well, I dropped it. It's got some microscopic imperfection that only my eyes can detect, but it's there. But then you also don't have to worry about, like, when am I going to... It's like having your first fight when you're a couple. And you realize, well, okay, we don't have to, like, dread now the first fight. It's like with my MacBook, my beautiful unibody aluminum MacBook. I got the first scratch, because I didn't know they made an invisible shield for this, and so I got the first scratch, like, actually on the body of the MacBook itself. And Laura came home, and I was just sort of in the office, just looking bleakly at the floor, and she said, "Baby, what's wrong?" And I was just like, it's all so sad. I just need a little time to myself, because I was just bereft about the... It was just bereft of any hope of good things ever happening in my life again. But I'd had this moment last Saturday where I was having an extended phone call with somebody. And here's a realization that I came to, is that I was complaining about how hard it was to hold the phone to my head for long periods of time, which made me sound like even weaker and more spindly than I normally do. I'm like, oh, it's so hard to hold the phone to my ear. I'm so exhausted. Can we have this phone? Can I just lay down for the rest of this call so I can lay my head on the phone? And I felt like the world's biggest pussy for complaining about how hard it was to hold the phone to my ear, even though the iPhone is, relatively speaking, a little heavy. But you know what I realized is this. It is not the phone's fault, nor is it my fault as such. It is that you and I, because we're about the same age, both grew up in an era when phones were huge, so you would do that thing where you cocked your head like a dog. Yeah, you would cock your head to the left, and you'd be, like, making cookies or something, and you're, like, whisking the egg, and you're saying... And so, anyway, I said to him, no. I mean, it's like, my husband's not going to be home for an hour. And you're mixing the thing while your head is, you've got the phone caught between your cheek and your shoulder.
Right.
Which we still do now with phones, because I see people doing it. I saw a woman bicycle by me the other day with doing that, cocking her head with her cell phone. But the thing is, the phones are now so thin, you basically have to turn your head at a 90-degree angle, which didn't really work. And so that's... So I realized it's really not that I'm a pussy. It's just that the phones have gotten so small, we can't do what we've done, like, forever. And so I was just, I had this whole thing of like, God damn, I don't want to buy any Bluetooth. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be some dick, you know, some schmuck, some putz walking around. Hey, so I'm going to go to the gym later on. You want to hook up and find some bitches? You know, while I'm just talking on my Bluetooth headset like a douche.
Do you say that on the phone?
No, but not now. But if you get a Bluetooth, don't you? Isn't it your experience that guys on Bluetooth headsets, and it's always guys, are saying things in that tone of voice?
Yeah.
Hey, let's hook up later on. We'll partay. You know, and you're just like, I'm gonna cut your testicles off so you can't breed. But it's like, I don't want to be the guy in a Bluetooth. And so I'm telling Sarah and Greg, I'm like, hey, we're done in the studio. And they're like, okay, have a great day. You know, what are you doing today? Greg said, oh, I got to go buy a goddamn Bluetooth thing so I can be a douche. And I was all sad about it. You know, like it was like, I felt like it was Sophie's choice or something. Like, I've chosen the Bluetooth. And then they pointed out something that I hadn't even realized, which is that when you get that iPhone, it comes with the in-ear headphones.
Yeah.
But it's actually, when you buy the iPhone, it actually comes with the earbuds that actually have the microphone
in
the cord, which I didn't realize. Anyway, so now I get out of the car the other day, and it's like, you know, and I'm, you know, jumbling all this stuff. And, you know, I'm trying to find, and I finally locate the space in my, you know, in my bag to put all the headphones. But then last night, what do? I actually am that guy where I'm driving along. Hey, let's get some bitches, you know, on my headset, on my, you know, my dangly microphone headset thing. I get out of the car. I have the bag. I have a Vizo. I have a whatever. I have my iPhone in my hand like an idiot, not in my pocket, which is where it's designed to sort of, you know, to go. And as I'm walking across the street, like I trip on something and then it becomes like a whole Rube Goldberg. The bag goes into the Vizo, and the Vizo spills, and then I see the liquid leaving the Vizo, and the liquid is heading for my iPhone, and that's the one thing you don't want to do with those things, get them wet. And so I have that, you know, no! And so I'm, you know, moving my iPhone, and for the love of God! And then, you know, like the cord comes unplugged, the iPhone starts plunging toward the ground, and it's basically a glass brick. So I'm doing that thing of, like, sticking my foot out like Pele, trying to block the goal, trying to block the phone from hitting the ground. The phone hits my ankle, bounces, and in the sidewalk in front of my house, the steps that lead up to my house are sort of it's like an angled concrete. And so the phone hits the angled concrete, and it just like does the bouncing end over end.
Wow.
I'm just, sweet Jesus! You know, and just and on a picking of the phone, like it's an infant that's fallen out of a skyscraper. And I've just, you know,
I'm sorry. Sorry I hurt you.
And then you cut to the long cutaway shot of me holding the phone, looking up. Why? You know, but I have to tell you, no lie. There's barely a mark on that thing. You know why? The invisible shield, Don. So this is not a paid plug or whatever. I'm just, and it wouldn't matter if it was because I'd need it anyway. That paid plug, would be from the heart, as they all are, because Rick Emerson doesn't endorse things in which he does not believe. I believe in the invisible shield. Mm-hmm. Also, when you buy your phone, they give you a free bumper thing.
Oh.
So I did that yesterday. So that moment has passed. I dropped the iPhone, and so there you go. So yeah, so Kelly and Jules left some kangaroo jerky here for us. They brought us many, many fine things. We'll maybe list some of these items later on. They brought us just a whole lot of it. They brought us a bunch of cool swag, as the kids say. So including some kangaroo jerky. We'll try that. So that was I dropped my phone.
Well,
that was my night.
I had two things. One was I went to Kmart because it was one of those.
You lead a many splendored existence, don't you?
Well, I needed a mop. And the last time I looked at a mop at like Fred Meyer, the amount of money they wanted for a mop just seemed sort of outlandish.
No, I bought my last mop there. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and so I thought, well, where do you get mops that are actually reasonably priced? And I thought, well, there's a Kmart not far from me, and I never actually think about it because I never shop there. And every once in a while, I go, oh yeah, there's a Kmart like three blocks from my house. So I went to the Kmart, and my husband came with me. And I did bump into, there were two things. One, I bumped into possibly one of the stupidest employees in a store I've ever met. This girl walking around, this blonde young woman wearing the little Kmart name tag and stuff. And I asked her where the cosmetics were. And she looked at me and she was, let me think. And she just starts looking around the store.
As though you couldn't do that yourself.
And then I realized, and she goes, well, the makeup is over here.
She didn't know what cosmetics meant.
Yeah. And then I noticed that in the direction she was gesturing, up by the ceiling, there was a huge sign that said cosmetics. And I was like, oh, so I should probably go over here where it says Cosmo. She said, yeah, it's been a long day, she said. And I'm thinking, I don't think that's the excuse.
No, it's been a long life, honey.
That's really it. Yeah. And then I was tootling through the store, you know, picking up sundry items. And there was a display. And I mentioned this because you have a lovely Kiss T-shirt on today.
I do. Yes, I do.
The four fellas.
This is the rock and roll over version of this T-shirt. Yes.
They have fleece blankets at Kmart that have different rock and roll designs on them.
Yes.
There's an AC/DC blanket.
Of course there
and
is.
A Leonard Skinner blanket. And there is a Kiss blanket. And on the fleece blanket, it's Kiss, the big Kiss logo, with little like pictures of all the guys inside of the letters on a nice fleece blanket that you could, you know.
How much was it?
It was $20. Otherwise, Jesus. I would have bought it for you, but I looked at it and I was like, no. No, you know, not for $20.
And at a Kmart, no. I mean, you would... Well, did I tell you when I went to Walmart to see Kiss World, which is their, you know, or whatever they were calling it. They had this whole thing where their new album was sold. Maybe it was only sold at Walmart. It was one of those, like, only at deals, like AC/DC did last year, where it was like AC/DC's thing was only at Walmart. And I think Garth Brooks did that, too. But the last Kiss album, Sonic Boom or whatever it was called, it only came out at Walmart. And so Gene Simmons like, and we're going to have a display called Kiss World, and you'll go there and be able to buy all your favorite Kiss. You know, and I'm like, okay. And so I just, like, you know, I'm like my master told me, I went to Walmart. And it was a place in Walmart they had set up called Kiss Corner. And it was just like an aisle, basically, just full of Kiss stuff. That's all it was. And it was like all the Kiss albums. That's where I got the Kiss M&Ms, which were $6. Do you know they wanted, actually, it was $6.99. They wanted as much for that little bag of Kiss M&Ms as we went for an entire month's worth of entertainment here at the Emerson News Network. $6.99. And it's like, even I couldn't do that. Even I could not. And they had, like, the little faces of the band on the M&Ms, but even $6.99. Are you kidding me? But then right next to the Kiss M&Ms, it was a Kiss, not a blanket. It was a Kiss collectible throw. It was a blanket.
Yeah,
that's
what that is. Yeah, I don't know if this was called a throw or a blanket or whatever. But yeah, some fleece thing.
Who buys that?
I don't know.
Not even me.
But I saw the Kiss one, and then when I realized they also had like an AC/DC one, and that was the one that got me, where I thought, who buys an AC/DC fleece blanket?
I don't know. I mean, was it big enough to put on a bed?
I don't know.
Because maybe when I was like, I mean, who am I kidding? When I was like 17, 18... You know, stepping out of my own as a young man to decorate my first, like, apartment or whatever that I had, I might have gone, like, you know, now that I'm on my own, this place is going to rock. I'll get an AC/DC blanket to sleep under.
But AC/DC was even actually still a band people listened to.
Yeah.
This is like there's an AC/DC throw and a Leonard Skinner throw.
Yeah, I don't get that one at all.
When I went to Kmart, I had a long day at the work, and I, of course, am officially a crippled person and have the bad knee. And I got to the store, and I was like going, ow, I'm limpy, ow, I'm limpy. And I looked to my right, and I saw they had one of those little electric carts that, like, crippled
people. Like the Rascal?
Yeah.
I'm a Rascal.
And I was like, I can actually use that because, you know, I'm actually...
Have you never used one of those before?
That's actually the second time I've ever used one.
Did you feel shame?
I do. The first time I did it because we went to Lowe's, and Lowe's is the size of like five football fields. And I was like, man, if I'm going to be here a while,
yeah,
I'm going to use the little card. And this was actually... And that was before I ever got like my hip fixed or anything. So it really was official. I really needed it. This time it was more like, you know, what the hell? What
are they, a lot of walking here.
What are they going to do? Stop me? I don't. And the thing is, I think that you could probably be anyone, and you could use one of those. And if you weren't just like a teenager driving around and engaging in horseplay, they're not going to, like, you know, confront you. They're not going to, like, run the risk of a lawsuit by telling you you don't look disabled.
Well, and I don't think that's actually. I mean, I guess it could be their store policy, but I don't think that's like the law anyway. I don't think it's not like a parking space out front, which is legally only for the handicapped. I don't think. I think the Rascals, it's like an honor system sort of a thing.
Yeah, they're for customer use, so you could pretty much be any customer and you could just
Boy, you are Larry David. You really have you had your own Curb Your Enthusiasm thing going on.
And the thing is, when I used it in Lowe's, it was really kind of awesome because the one at Lowe's, when you backed up, it actually beeped,
beep, beep,
which was cool. This one didn't do that. But also, Kmart, the aisles are a lot more narrow than at Lowe's, so I kept smacking into things. And, like, then Patrick would walk over and pick up whatever it was I knocked off the shelf onto the floor. And he's like, stop doing that? I was like, I'm sorry. But like at one point, I went around a corner and I got the corner of the rascal thing caught like under
an end of aisle display.
Yes, it kind of like went wedge, and there was a sound of metal bending as it like got stuck under the end cap of the end of the thing, and I had to try and back out of it. And I was, and Patrick was just so humid. He was embarrassed that I was using the thing at all. Then he was embarrassed that I kept like running into things.
The pyramid of cans at the end of the aisle just comes down,
and that I kept giggling.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Because I was just having way too good of a time.
Well, how could you not? I mean, so I'm totally going to do that. I think they have those at Safeway. Why not?
They can't. You know, they're not going to stop you.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to film it, too. I'll take my flip cam with me and just do like a whole little... and see if I can just clip somebody's ankle.
And maybe. If you want to, I could loan you... I have two canes, and I could loan you one. And then you just carry the cane and have the cane propped up. And people will go, just see the cane and like, oh, he must have something wrong with him.
Or I could just sort of like mutter to myself a lot. Or maybe just put a patch over one eye.
Well, because when I was damaged before I ever got a cane, people would just kind of look at me like there's something wrong with her, but we don't know what it is because I was walking all funny. But as soon as I got the cane...
People left you alone?
No, people were nice to me.
They open doors and they would like lift stuff for you?
Yes, and ask if they could help me. And all of a sudden it was like I was not something weird and threatening anymore. I was something they could understand and empathize with.
Because you were not like a vague illness or you know, whatever that they were afraid they'd catch.
Yeah. Or I could have just been crazy and lurching about because there was something mentally wrong with me.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, are you just stumbling around like it could have been like a brain worm or something?
Right. Or
again, like it could have been like, you know, some new polio that you might have breathed onto their kid. You got a cane, though. They know. Well, first of all, if you have a cane, they know what's wrong with you. They know you're not crazy, probably. Although, you know. but they know that at least in terms of the walking, it's a physical thing. And also, here's the other thing. By dint of having a cane, that is almost certainly evidence that you have been to a doctor. And so they trust that you're not contagious. Whatever it is you do have, they're not going to get on them.
Even though anybody can spend $20 and buy a cane at, like, Walgreens.
Right. That's true.
But I will say, before we move on to something else, it's only the second time I've ever used one of those little carts. But a couple of times I've been to IKEA with my husband. And they have wheelchairs that you push.
Right.
And I make him push me around in a wheelchair. And then everything we're buying, he just stacks on top of me like I'm the cart.
Doesn't sound like you're the cart.
And if he gets a little bitchy about it, then I just very loudly say, "You have to be nice to me. I'm crippled," so that other people can hear.
Oh, you know, as opposed to Lara, you know what Lara's favorite thing to do in public is? Like if I'm ever being obstreperous or obnoxious, she'll just actually say, "Are you going to hit me again?"
See,
I'm sorry.
We do the opposite thing. We do something in public, and Patrick looks at me, and Patrick will go, "I'm going to punch you in the crotch," or something. I will cut your throat. And then people look over at us like whether they should call the cops or not.
And then I'm like, she'll do the, I'm sorry, just quit punching me, you know. And then I have to, she's only kidding, folks. It's a bit of dark humor we have here in our family.
I did that in front of one of the first times I was at Patrick's parents' house.
Really? When you told him you were going to cut his head off?
No, we were having sort of, it wasn't really even a bickery thing, but it was a slight sort of a, oh, you said that, no, you said this, whatever. And he made some kind of a gesture with his hand, and I went, ah! And I ducked like I was afraid he was going to hit me. And it just killed. Because his mom and his sisters thought that was the funniest thing they'd ever seen.
They're not alone. All right. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Clergy Watch, Kelly Clark on the way. Top five and so forth. Ladies and gentlefolk, at the news desk, here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A land surveyor stumbled upon a human skeleton in the woods near Sisters of St. Mary's campus Tuesday in Beaverton. Police said the worker was marking trees and shrubs near the corner of Southwest Farmington Road and Southwest 148th Avenue when he found the remains. It appeared to be an adult, but it's unknown if it's male or female, police said. There was nothing criminally suspicious about the scene or any perceived threat to the community. Washington County medical examiners are working to identify the remains.
Was it buried or was it just sort of laying there?
I have no idea. They were marking trees and shrubs, so I imagine it must have been, at least part of it was just laying there on the ground.
That really is the most intriguing when it's partially exposed, or when it's a thing that, like, the dog digs up, you know, and the dog brings home. You didn't tell me that your dog brought home a bone for you at one point, did you? Was that you?
That was not me.
This can't be a thing that was in a news story. I think there's, I swear to God, there's somebody that, like, I know, where it's like the dog brought home some sort of a suspicious bone, like a bone they couldn't quite identify. And they took it to the man, and they said, hey, dog brought this bone home. And the officer, like, looked at it really long and hard and said, that is interesting. And then, like, they never heard anything else about it. Like, they never heard if it was a human or if it was an animal or if it was whatever. But the cop looked at it and seemed to, like, narrow his eyes and went, that is intriguing. And, like, took the guy's information and then, like, they never contacted them again. I have to figure out who that was. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our clergy watch. I'm going to get to this.
Let's see. Here's your clergy watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. By the way, today's show brought to you by, among other folks, Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. And he does cleaning for your home or office at 971-533-3211. More on that later on. Here's a clergy watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson show.
Well, I guess it would be nice. I got a half faith. Ooh, I got a half faith. Because I got a half faith, faith, faith.
Here is your clergy watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
The prominent pastor of a 25,000-member megachurch near Atlanta denies allegations in a lawsuit that he coerced two young men from the congregation into a sexual relationship, his attorney said. Pastor Eddie Long of New Birth Missionary Baptist Church in Atlanta is the subject of the suit by two Georgia men. Their attorney, B.J. Bernstein.
Wait, hold on a second. So this is a pastor who's alleged to have coerced some men into sex. His name is Eddie Long, and his lawyer's name is B.J.
Yes.
Okay.
Indeed.
Just checking.
The men are now 20 and 21. They filed the lawsuit on Tuesday, and this is what their attorney has to say.
Also being sued here because other members of the church, employees of the church, covered for Bishop Long. Because they would do anything to protect the most powerful church in the Southeast.
Okay, so B.J. Bernstein is the lawyer for the guys, not
right.
for the pastor.
No,
all
for
right.
the guys.
Okay, so
also being sued here because other members of the church, employees of the church, covered for Bishop Long.
So they're suing the church and the pastor himself.
The most powerful church in the Southeast.
I don't get, I mean, I kind of know what it is, but when they talk about mega churches, I don't really know if it's like an actual like distinction of some kind, what that really means.
Well, it has to do, they have 25,000 members so and the building.
The size of the congregation.
The size of the congregation and generally the size of the physical churches themselves tend to be just enormous.
It's like one of those places, like, what's his name, Ted Haggard?
Right.
Had. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The men who filed the suit were 17 and 18-year-old members of the church when they say Long abused his spiritual authority to seduce them with cars, money, clothes, jewelry, international trips, and access to celebrities.
Wait, hold on a second. So they were how old?
17 and 18.
Okay, well, 17, I guess you can make the case that at least that you're a minor. But if one of them was 18... We are sure that one, it does say that one of them was 18.
That's what it says. It says they were 17 and 18 at the time.
Well, this would just be my constitutionally protected opinion, Don. This isn't, as guaranteed to me by the First Amendment. It seems like if you're 18 years old and you're accepting, that's just being a hustler.
Yeah.
All right? You're just that is just being a twink at that point. That's not really being abused. That's just being a woman. Who in this case happens to have a penis. All right. I'm just saying. No, look, an older guy says, look, I'm going to give you a bunch of have the largesse that my fame and power and wealth, accord me. And you're going to get lots of bright, shiny objects. But you got to do me. And you go, OK, that's just being
a woman.
That's just being a woman, Don, or in this case, this guy. So what? Oh, I'm not allowed to engage in gender-based sarcasm and satiric overstatement. Sorry. You know what I'm saying, though, but I mean, that's like, that is
oh,
not
Oh, I know
being,
what you're saying.
I'm saying if you're an 18-year-old guy and, and the guy's going to give you bright, shiny things, baubles, in exchange for humping him, you really are just hustling the guy at that point.
Or being a woman.
Or being a woman. I'm just saying women have raised it to sort of an art form. They've just, that's the area in which they live. That's the game in which they excel better than anyone.
That's really our specialty,
hey,
if you will, getting men to give us things in exchange for us humping them.
Yes. Yes, it is. And look, let's have no illusions about this. I'd do it if I could. Men would if men had the ability, more, men other than this fine lad, for example. And in fact, the proof of that is when men do have the ability to do that, they do it. Case in point, this guy here. So I'm just saying of the 100% of people on Earth who wish that they could do that, only 50% of people on Earth really are able to do it. And you are richer for it, both literally and figuratively.
Bernstein says the pastor used his authority as bishop to bring young male church members to the point of engaging in a sexual relationship.
Hot older guy in a uniform, you know what I'm talking about.
He would use biblical stories to talk about how important it was to follow your leader and your master and let him know that the acts that he was engaged in were not necessarily meaning that he was a homosexual or that either of them was.
Right.
Right. No, no, no. It's spare the rod. Spare the rod. All right. There you go.
Long, by the way, like many men who get caught in this sort of thing, he has called for a national ban on same-sex marriage and his church counsels gay members to become straight.
That's hard to believe.
In 2004, he led a march with Bernice King to her father's Atlanta grave to support a national constitutional amendment to protect marriage between one man and one woman.
Well, that is, I mean, you know. It's just it's God's way of giving us a little amusement.
And he just looks like that guy, too, doesn't he?
Now, see, here's the problem, Dawn, is that you are classing this as a homosexual relationship. He looks ever so slightly like, is it Roland Martin? Is that the guy on CNN, the political correspondent?
I think he looked a little like
times.
Bernie Mac.
I could see that. Boy, you know, here's the thing. Let me just tell you this. You know, the thing about being a black guy is you can roll the style no matter what the context, because he was a pastor anyway at this mega church. And, you know, it's like, you know, like the typical pastor just is sort of adorned with, you know, with just like a halo of cigarette smoke, you know, and wrinkles. But he's got what looks to be a pricey, well-cut suit. He's like not actually a gold chain, but sort of a gold necklace, like a pendant. He's got a great watch, and then he's got what appears to be, does that not look to be like a huge-ass gold bracelet he's wearing?
Yes, it is.
It's just massive. I mean, I can't even imagine the size of that thing. So there you go. But you know, because the black guys can totally rock that, like, anywhere. It doesn't matter what they're, what the context, what they're doing. They just make it work.
Well, I'm going to be testing our new photo visual aid concept, and
let me explain why you're sending it. Let me explain, okay. Actually. So we have labored long and hard in this program. Not that long and not that hard, but I spent a few minutes last night trying to figure out how to solve this issue of where we put visual aids for the program. Because we'll always say, like, hey, look at this guy's picture. Hey, look at this guy's mugshot. Hey, look at this giant shark that's eating a guy. Hey, look at an earthworm coming out of somebody's face that Cheryl sent us. But we never know where to put those photos so that everybody can sort of see them. Because, you know, there's like RickEmerson.com, and then there's Facebook, you know, Facebook.com/RickEmerson, and then there's a Rick Emerson Show Facebook, and Don's got a Facebook, and Flickr, and Photo Bucket, and Kersnap, or, you know, zhizhibabow.com, or whatever the hell people are putting crap on now.
Can you spell that for me?
It starts with a Q, and then there's a silent H, and then there's a 7, and an underscore, because somebody had the other one. And then it's .net. So we had no idea, like, how to, you know, where to put stuff. And so I hit upon this thing last night that, you know, if you're looking for one of the visual aids, it's by definition, I think, because you were just listening to the show. And, you know, so it's not like anybody's going to be, you know, just wandering around the street and going like, hey, I suddenly feel the need to look for a picture of a shark chasing a guy in a canoe. If you're doing that, it's because you were just listening. So we are experimenting with a new photo placement system, a gallery where we're going to have all of our photos displayed. And the other great thing about it is that it will allow Dawn and I and Cheryl to upload any photo from any source really, really easily, and it'll go into an album. And I'm going to give you the URL here in a second. I'm kind of postponing. I'm stalling because Dawn is actually, just sort of emailing the photo. Anyway, it's going to be a central repository for all of the show pictures, whether it's like pictures of the staff or like the events or pictures of the studio, or whether it's actually like visual aids from the show itself. So we're going to did you email that off?
I did.
Now, it actually takes a bit because they got to process. Okay, there it is. It has appeared.
Is it?
There it is. It's in today. It's in the category marked today's visual aids.
Oh,
by God! Look at that, Don. It's right there.
Well, look at that.
Okay, so
it's that simple.
And is that the caption you put in the subject line?
Yeah.
All right. So, let's now try this, shall we? Okay, everybody. Then now, please to be going to rickemerson.com/pictures. And it's not the photos or pics or the whatever. It's just rickemerson.com/pictures. Let's all do it together, shall we, right now? Yes, we're typing in real time. All right. RickEmerson.com/pictures. All right, there you go. And you're going to see two galleries. One is two albums. One is Visual Aids for Yesterday. Not really like we had the chalk penis yesterday, but I needed something. And then one is Today's Visual Aids, where you're going to see a picture of Kenny Powers for some reason, just because that's the thing I chose to put up. So there's a picture of Kenny Powers, and then there's also Pastor Eddie Long. So if you go to RickEmerson.com/pictures, what we'll do in the future, is we will actually say, go to RickEmerson.com/pictures and go to Visual Aids for like September 25th or September 5th or 9th or whatever. So, but it is right now, it's Today's Visual Aids, and it is, if you're listening to this in Tomorrowland, it is Visual Aids for September 22nd. See a picture of Pastor Eddie Long. What does he look like? You know what he looks like? Here's the other thing he looks like. He looks like if Malcolm Jamal Warner from The Cosby Show had grown up not as he looking as he does now,
yeah,
but had grown up looking the way he ought, because he looks totally different now. Have you seen that guy?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a good-looking guy. He just doesn't look anything. He does not look like an older version of his younger self, if that makes sense. This is exactly what Malcolm Jamal Warner, or Mal Jam, as he was known, this is exactly what Malcolm Jamal Warner should have looked like when he grew up. And it is a gold bracelet. It is huge.
Yeah, huge gold bracelet.
All right. Is this going to be some grudge you're going to carry around, by the way, that I refer to these guys as just acting like women? Is it going to be like just some thing you're going to carry around attitudinal quiver?
I can't help but be a tiny bit offended by you.
I'm not saying you do it or that all women do it. But
no, but you characterized the behavior of accepting goods and monies in exchange for humping,
yes,
as a woman-like behavior.
If you were to ascribe it to one gender or the other, which gender would you say does that more frequently? And you have to be honest and say it's women. You are being disingenuous if you do not say that.
Yeah, but it's the way you said it. When you said that doing that is being a woman, as if that is a standard behavior for women.
Well, as if you think that I am the type of person. That only works if you don't know me and have never heard me speak before and think that I'm a guy who just says stuff like, well, all women, you know, especially when it's that kind of the month, when that time of the month, engage in that behavior, which, like, you know, I'm not a guy who says that, but let's
know,
be honest.
But am I to never be offended by anything you say because I know deep down you're not actually a douche?
Yes. That's exactly
how
that works.
No matter how offensive something you say is, I should just go, ah!
No,
I know Rick isn't really like that.
No, because you're doing it. No, because you're doing it. You're starting from the premise that you're going to be offended, and then working backward. If you start from the premise that I probably am not a guy who just comes out of here and just engages in hateful, bigoted speech, then you wouldn't be offended in the first place. In other words, the only reason you'd be offended is if you think I really think that.
That's nonsense. I can still be offended by something you say.
You can, but it's illogical. It doesn't make any sense. That would be like you being offended that we were like making jokes about folks hobbling about on canes. You're not offended because you know that I'm not really like thinking that, you know, that like, you know, I'm not really thinking you're, you know, subhuman because you got a gimpy leg.
But that's also not like a fundamentally offensive thing to make jokes about, at least not to me.
That's what I'm saying. So it's only offensive because you're deciding to be offended by it, is my point. And also it was a goddamn joke. Just engaging in humor, you know, comedy. With a K on the front of it. Fine, be that way. Are we done with the? Are we done with the clergy watch?
Yes, we are.
Jesus. All right, there's your clergy watch for whatever the hell is it, Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Because I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith. Because I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith.
Really not. I have to ask you. Is it nature's special time? I mean, you can be honest. Zing. All right. I wish everybody could have seen your eye roll just now. Oh, it was awesome. I'm sorry. That was like, I was required by comedy bylaws to do that just now. It was like I would have had to turn in my rubber chicken if I hadn't.
I'm going to find something.
Good to be alive.
I am going to find something at some point that will offend you personally. That will, whether, you know, it's like, I'm just going to make some kind of blanket statement about, you know, skinny, big-nosed radio DJs or something, and you're going to be offended. And I'm just going to say, but Rick, you know that deep down inside, I'm really a nice person and I like you.
No, because if you're deliberately looking for something that you know will offend me, by definition, that is not nice behavior. Then you're not. See, but that's I will be offended because you have just said that it's a thing you're going to find just for the purposes of offending me, which is not why I made that statement.
To make an intellectual point.
Well, that's, but see, now you're changing your reasons. Now it's to make an intellectual point. A moment ago, it was just because you want to offend me.
Well, not just because I
was, and I was not, I would never intentionally offend you, and you know that.
I know that.
Okay, well.
But one can't offend someone unintentionally.
I don't think that happens in the way that, I don't think that happens in the way that you're saying it happened. It, in other words, it's not like a door that I open and I don't know you're standing behind it or something. And I go, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, if you're going to be offended by something, it requires context. I mean, all offense requires context or it doesn't exist.
Well,
and so the context must be that you think I mean it. Or that you think I am serious about it.
If you jokingly told some kind of a extremely
a racist joke,
unpleasant racist or homophobic joke or something, I would, you know, I know that you're not racist or you're not homophobic, but I could still be offended by the telling of the joke.
No, but see, I think you could be offended by the joke, like in the abstract. But I don't think you could be offended by the telling of the joke. And even if you were, you're doing that thing again where you're starting from the premise of if you told some horrible off-putting joke or whatever adjective you just used, unpleasant or whatever, you're just starting from the premise that it's like a thing you don't like. But I'm saying the only reason my wacky jape, my jibe about women and how they be shopping or whatever, the only reason you're offended by that is because, you know, you've just decided you're going to be offended by it.
But that's a ridiculous argument, because you can use that argument for anyone ever being offended by anything.
I'm just saying, like, we malign people we malign people in every single social strata, like on a daily basis. And many of those social strata are, you know, a group that you fall into. I malign suburbanites. We made fun of people on Canes.
I'm absolutely sure that I say things that offend people possibly on a daily basis.
But I'm just saying, don't you see how it's like illogical for you to just pick one out of the three to be offended by?
No. I don't see how it's illogical for me to be offended by something.
But why are you not offended by, like, the Kane humor?
I'm not
sure.
It's
just an arbitrary distinction that exists only inside your own head, and which is fine, but I'm just saying, like, there's no rational basis for it. Because if you were somebody who was offended by, in other words, if you were somebody who was offended by me poking fun at a member of society or a certain class or a gender or whatever, in general, that would at least make sense, because then at least you're a person who just doesn't like to see folks singled out and made fun of because of their race or gender or ethnicity or orientation or whatever. Then you just feel like, well, it's wrong to make fun of people for things like that, or to stereotype or to make rash generalizations about a certain group of people. But you're obviously not opposed to making rash or comedic generalizations about a certain group of people. You know, only about certain groups of certain people.
But I'm not going to disregard, well, not even a matter of disregard. I'm trying to think of what the word is, but I'm not going to invalidate someone being offended by something that I say.
Not someone, though. It's you. I'm asking you, though. I'm saying you're not offended by making rash generalizations, in any other way I have ever experienced on this show. And yet it's like you have this, like, you single out, though, like this one. It's like a no parking except between the hours of 5 and 7.
It was a very specific grammatical turn of phrase that you used that made it sound as if you were generalizing about women in their entirety.
Well, sound like it. I was. But the point is, I was doing it, like, sarcastically.
Okay.
And doesn't bother you when I do it to any other group.
I furrowed my brow and maybe rolled my eyes a little bit. I didn't go on strike, you know. I didn't storm out of the room.
I am just trying to figure out why you have only, like, that is the only time it offends you. Is when it's directed at women and not, you know, again, like, caned up folk. Or when I say, like, retarded.
Again, the personal is political. You know, for whatever reasons, I am not offended by disabled humor, possibly because I do not actually identify myself as a disabled person, nor have I ever experienced any kind of inequities in my life or any difficulties because of being a disabled person. I am, however, female. I am a woman, and I do, to a certain degree, identify myself as a woman. And so, therefore, I believe that, you know, I am allowed a tiny bit of offense if you make a sweeping generalization about women.
Except the sweeping generalization I just made had nothing to do with you ever being denied anything in your life ever. In fact, it was quite the opposite. The sweeping generalization
was more about the identification and also the awareness of certain inequities and being a little bit sensitive of living in a culture where I have grown up listening to jokes about women. I'm also offended about sweeping generalizations about men, for that matter. You know,
you can be offended on my behalf then, because I ain't. So it doesn't matter to me. Yeah, you sure you're still not doing a show at KBOO on the side or something? Or maybe have they opened a branch of Reed College near your house or something? And it's sort of like you put something next to an onion in the refrigerator onion?
I am wearing comfortable shoes and have not shaved under my arms recently.
Well, I think I know what we're dealing with then. All right. It's okay, Dawn. I still love you. It's 503-505-6964. What time is it?
I don't know. Almighty. People in the text box are just yelling at us to tell us to stop talking.
No. That is between them and their God. I'm just legitimately curious about it.
Of course, there's also people in the text box saying they just want more hate. So.
Yeah. Well, see, it's a win-win-win, as Michael would say. No, I'm not trying to pick a fight about it. I'm really not. I've just got this guy going, fight, 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 fight. I'm not trying to continually poke at you about it. Here's the thing. If we can just speak. See, you rolled your eyes again. What is that? You just now rolled your eyes when I said, here's the thing. What?
Okay, because you were preparing to move on and then you decided not to move on.
Well, because I feel like I wanted to say that, here's the other thing.
Okay.
Is that, in the overarching sense, the larger point is that I find conversations like this interesting because I don't mean that in some sort of look at your mind work trying to come up with answers for things. I just mean that, I am really fascinated by as not that I'm comparing myself to him as such, but, like George Carlin was about the use of words and the context of words and how they evolve and how they whatever. So I'm always intrigued by how people respond to or deal with certain words or certain things delivered in a variety of guises and in a variety of contexts and the intended meaning versus the inferred or implied meaning and whatever. So that just interests me in general. But also, the thing I have noticed is that you do, in my experience,
okay,
which admittedly is being filtered through the prism of being a man. So my flawed Y chromosome has observed you for some time, and this is just my assessment, that you do tend to, if I were to put a list of 15 things on the table of topics or areas of discussion, you do tend to express more legitimate annoyance when it deals with what I would call women's issues. Than with anything else. So that is the one point where it's you just seem to deviate and you get off the attitudinal track that you travel down most of your life, and it's you do become not a different person, but it's this whole separate facet of your personality that emerges only when talking about issues that have to do with women and a perceived inequality or whatever, in some sort of a story. That is where
I can own that.
Thank you. Please take it back. Sister, then you're Manny Faces on He-Man, where for just a moment you're kink, and wacky, hateful, fun-loving Dawn, who ridicules everything alongside her compatriot Rick, just vanishes, and it's I get strident Andrea Dworkin Dawn, who's irritated about something that the patriarchy has done or is doing to her, or perhaps is inflicting onto everyone from this studio.
It's not so much the patriarchy. It's that it's a bit of a hot button with me. That gender stereotypes, both for men and women. I get just as irritated, hearing that men described as being, chronically insensitive and they can't ask for directions and they all like football and they don't know how to do laundry. And, it's nonsense like that that I can't believe we're still actually expressing, and it continues to create. We feed these stereotypes about what men and women are like as if we're completely different freaking species.
You on this program a few weeks ago actually used the phrase, and this will be the time when you go, when did I say that? And I'll say, I don't know, I don't write stuff down. But you actually on the show a while back, a few weeks ago, actually made the observation that stereotypes, though, do spring from a certain kind of reality. And so I'm just saying, if if one had to say that behavior, which is the typically receiving of shiny goods and services or whatever in exchange for giving up love, if that was engaged in by one gender or the other, it, typically speaking, that is a female behavior. I mean, it's just science, as Ron Burgundy would say. I believe that is the way, not just with humans, but I believe in most mammals to begin with. That's just the way it works. So, like, you know, just blame the universe, sister. Don't blame me. Blame the creator.
All right.
Blame God. Blame the architect, Don. Don't look messenger message. Okay. All right. And I say this as, look, I have many friends that are women, Don. This is where, if I were that guy, I would point out, look, I am married to a woman, I will have you know, and to a woman's studies major, by the way.
Well,
and that is true. And Don, and she's perfectly pleasant. She's not scraggly-legged at all. So, I mean, look, ladies.
She doesn't give you back talk.
That's what I'm saying. There's no reason you can't learn to read and still be sexy. That's what I'm saying. All right. Can we, we should move on.
Oh, we should have moved on like 15 minutes ago.
Well, let me just say this, that when you hit the wrong button, there we go. When you're listening to this radio program and you say to yourself, my God, what a fantastic show. They can weave so effortlessly from sarcasm to comedy to thoughtful discussion to enlightenment to philosophical musings to music to penises to clowns, then back to philosophical musings and then to Doritos. It boggles my mind how this show can be provided to me at really what is almost a cost of nothing. I mean, really, it is. If you were to extrapolate this out over the course of your life, I mean, you really are. I mean, really, we're almost paying you to take this show, if you think about it. I mean, if you look at it on a long enough timeline. But this show is supported by fine folks like yourself and also by Mr. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution. He is the owner, proprietor, operator of that business. It is a Portland-based business, and they will come to your home. They come to your office, home or residential, and they will clean your carpet, your tile, your upholstery, your stone, entryway, your hardwood floor, marble, anything like that. Now, marble, admittedly, I mean, I got to plead ignorance here because I'm not all that bright, and also, you know, I live in a house where putting marble in my house would just be pointless and superfluous, like in every way imaginable. So I'm just gonna have to take his word on this when he says that people get marble that's dirty. I wouldn't imagine that marble dirties up all that much because this isn't like effectively a non-porous surface. I mean, I don't really know what there is to clean on marble, unless he's talking about like between the tiles again, like
need to polish it.
Is that true?
Yes, it does get dull.
I don't think I've ever owned anything in my life that was made out of actual marble. Not even my marbles were made of marble. So, I mean, I'm just entirely out of the loop on that. Well, I'll take your word for it. You folk who exist in a higher tax bracket than myself will know all about that. The point is you want to call Mr. Michael Beatty at 971-533-3211. 971. See, now I'm overthinking everything. Don, I wasn't asking you about cleaning marble because you're a woman and therefore polishing floors.
Oh, yes, you were.
I was. I wasn't, though. Or was I? I wasn't. That wasn't. 971-533-3211 is the phone number for The Cleaning Solution. Mr. Michael Beatty can be reached at 971-533-3211. A proud sponsor of The Rick Emerson Show. Tell him you heard it here, won't you please?
Denver all whole day.
Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. See, if we were... Well, you're a hugging person, aren't you? Do you hug?
Not really, no.
Oh, all right. Well, we're more like... This is why, Don. It's because we're so similar, you and I.
I like to... I have some male friends that I'm comfortable hugging, but only a couple. And I don't usually hug my female friends at all.
What's that about?
I'm just not a huggy person.
But I mean, why... Not to revisit the thing, but why do you hug male friends but not women?
Because I don't know.
Can I just make up my own explanation?
Because I have some male friends that I maybe have like kind of a little bit of a crush on that I feel good about pressing my body up against them.
That's not even really a hug then. That's just like a low-key grope.
It's an excuse for physical contact. That's pretty much it.
Okay.
But I feel awkward. You know, I always feel very awkward when people, particularly people I don't know very well, hug me. It's like, really?
It's so great that you feel awkward hugging people you don't know, but you don't feel awkward hugging like male acquaintances as just an excuse to like press your body against them.
Damn right.
Hold on a second. May I make imprints of my bosoms on your chest?
I realize that if I was a man and I was saying that about my female friends, that it would sound really
Don,
easy.
I'm offended. Sorry. I was just going to say, though, that if we were hugging people, see, we would have hugged during the break just now.
Oh,
we
yeah, that would have.
Yeah.
We did have a little warm moment off the air.
I'm just saying, I don't want you to think I'm that. Well, look, and here's the other thing, is that you noted that you said that, like, you, on the scale of one to, and then we'll move on, I swear, so just spare me the move on emails. But you know, I said during the break, I wasn't really trying to offend you, and I wasn't continuing the conversation to bother you. It's because I found it philosophically interesting and intellectually stimulating to have that. And then you said that you weren't, like, that offended, like, in the grand scheme of things. And I will say that I have actually known... I knew that that's because I knew that if I ever said anything that actually really... Like, if you came in and I was just pushing puppies through, like, a wood chipper or something, this is what we're doing today, Don! You know, that you would actually have no trouble telling me that or just leaving. And I've actually worked with... Fortunately, not on shows like this most of the time, but I've actually worked with shows, often a male-female team, actually, where, you know, they'd just rub each other raw over the course of however long. I used to work in the same building as a morning show. Where it was a male-female morning team, and they just loathed each other. But it's like they were so not shy about showing it because occasionally one of them would actually just throw a coffee cup at the other one. But from a distance of like 4 feet away, which is about perfect because that's far enough away that you can really wind up and get a good throwing distance, but close enough that you can actually just bean the other person in the head. And so like about once a month, you would hear like a psh in the studio because one of them would have thrown a ceramic coffee cup at the other.
Yeah, I don't really think about the fact that I tend to express things rather in a rather large, rather passionate sort of a manner because, you know, I honestly, you know, yes, if I was genuinely like really offended by saying, oh, you know it. And like I was thinking something Al Franken wrote in one of his books, in his Why Not Me, his book.
Right.
And paraphrasing, I've had people, you know, say to me that, you know, gee, Don, you're angry. You just get angry so easily. And I was like, no, I'm just passionate about things. You've never seen me angry.
You'd know when I'm angry.
If you ever saw me angry, you would S yourself and die.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've had the, I have had that that discussion many, many times with people in the past, and I would say, you know, like if I am ever really truly angry at you, if you have ever really enraged me, like there will be no mistaking that for anything else, because it, I used, you know, and you and I are probably very similar in this way, in that I used to have real, very, very serious anger management problems when I was younger, and I've never ever been like, I'm not a physically violent person, because I could just never get away with that, because the first time I tried to punch anybody, like man, woman, a baby, it's like they would just punch me right back. But also, like I just couldn't, like just being being like such an angry person all the time was just not, like I was just not having a lot of fun in my life that way. So I had to sort of get past that. But I used to just be like really, really unbelievably just volcanic, like all the time, but covered with this like really thin, brittle surface politeness as though I were British, where it's like at any moment you just, you know, you feel like they're going to take out a blackjack on you. Anyway, so but I would just tell people, like, you have no idea really what it's like when I am truly enraged at you. But like that will have no similarity to any other emotion you've seen me express. There will be no illusion about that.
On a technical, there, is everything up and running? Because we've apparently dropped out from. I don't know if it's on the Live 365 section.
You
or...
know, let me hold on. Let me. You know, we are okay. Well, everything is working here.
Okay.
Live 365 claims that we are on the air.
Okay.
You know what I could actually do? I could actually check my check the live stream of my iPhone, I suppose.
You could.
Is this just Live 365?
I'm really not sure. I've just had Cheryl and a couple of other people have said that we've dropped off. That
well, that's okay. That is really weird then, because I'm looking at the mobile stream, and so. Looking at the mobile stream right now, it looks as though the people on the mobile stream got dropped as well, which is strange because the mobile stream it seems to actually still be up. So, and I apologize to people who are listening either who are either listening live right now, if that is indeed possible, or if you are listening to this in the future, that we're sort of puzzling this out.
I think we've I think we've dropped off on everybody. We've got one of those Live 365 errors.
Okay.
They're not receiving our broadcast. So.
That's odd. So I'm going to reboot then right now.
Oh, okay.
All right. So if you are listening now, I apologize. I have to do this. All right, there we go.
Okay.
So as of now, or possibly like 30 seconds from now, because it takes a while for the signal to get from here to out there. Here's the really weird thing about that, and I don't want to get bogged down in technical stuff. But
and apologize, and we apologize to people who were without us for a few moments.
I don't know how long that was, actually. Let's see if I can actually get the phone to sort of pick up here. All right, now things are just okay. Now things are going wonky everywhere.
Okay, I was telling people in the text box that we were.
All right. Sorry. Well, in any event, okay. So, but you know what? I'm looking now, and people are back. Let me check really quickly. Just one more time. Let me be this guy. Let's do this. I'm gonna have you just amuse everyone with a news anecdote, Don, because I'm actually gonna double check this on my own phone and make sure that it's streaming
correctly. We
need
one of those scary lady voices for. We had experienced technical difficulties, but we're back.
Oh, it's sort of you know what? I have the I have that new sounder we've been using. That's the it's the interval sound from Radio Moscow, where the woman says the Rick Emerson program will begin shortly. I should just sort of be playing. Should be playing that as these things happen. All right.
Well, I don't think we're back up though, because people are still.
All right. Well, I'm gonna look into it. Okay. So, but in the meantime, I should just be doing
something.
A sort of like
the Rick Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.
So there you go.
And now, from the news desk, This is Dawn Taylor.
A TriMet bus driver on paid leave and under investigation for reading a Kindle while driving was fired once before from the agency. Lacan Cushbane was fired in 2006 for contact with a customer that constituted, quote, posing an immediate threat to public safety, according to spokeswoman Becky Witt. He filed a grievance after the firing and, through mediation, was given his job back in October 2007. He did get a 30-day suspension. Cushbane also said he had a pending suspension of his Oregon driver's license for traffic citations in his personal vehicle. He was able to resolve that without affecting his commercial driver's license. A passenger used his cell phone to videotape Cushbane as he drove down I-5 through the Terwilliger curves last week. In the roughly 60-second video, the electronic reader was clearly seen on his dashboard. A passenger who videotaped him told local news that without question, he was reading his Kindle. His lawyer, Jonah Paisner, said last week that his client was not reading and that the several passengers who complained provided only their side. Witt added Tuesday that prior to the reader incident, Cushbane was given clear, direct communication from his supervisor that he was not to use any electronic device while driving a bus.
Mustn't, ever.
No. How you doing over there?
I'm good. The mobile stream is up. I was just listening.
Okay.
It appears that Live 365 is up.
Well, I'm told that we're working again, at least partially, so.
I have, not to be Meg Ryan about it, but I have no response to this. I have no explanation for that. It doesn't,
I don't think your mic is on, though.
I'm sorry, that's,
no. I had it off, so you couldn't, I'm sorry, I guess I should shut the studio door, too.
Hold on a second. All right.
This is the best show ever.
This is our, you know what it is? This is our instant karma for bickering just now. This is really the universe punishing us for this. So our apologies to anybody who's inconvenienced by that. Don't forget, if you are listening live right now, but you find that you just can't go on living without the missing 5 minutes, which, by the way, basically consists of us going, I don't know. Can you hear it? I can hear it. Why can't they hear it? Probably something on their end. You can actually go to rickemerson.com, hear it from the archives, and it's also available on iTunes as well. Also, don't forget that when I should actually be saying this earlier in the show, that this show is actually encored kind of throughout the day. So what we do is we do Legion of News live from noon to one, and then we do this very fine radio program, and then there's a little brief musical interlude, after which we just encore Legion of News and the Rick Emerson Show, kind of back-to-back, sort of Howard style, until the next broadcast. So this whole thing will be encored again here in just a few. So Rick Emerson regrets the error.
We do, but since we have Kelly Clark still to come, we should probably do the remaining live spot that we skipped at the top of the show.
Is this for our good friends at Castalia Language Center?
It is indeed.
All right, excellent. Fantastic. Yes. All right. That was the best live spot ever just there. All right, then. Just going to take a moment to center myself. I'm going to find my happy place inside. One moment. Okay, there you go. Now, the difference between... I talked a lot about the difference between how children learn, teenagers learn, and how adults learn. Here's another thing, the difference between being a young person and being an adult. When you're a young person, you're at school basically because you got to be there. The state has more or less told you, like, you will be incarcerated in this place by your corporate masters for 18 years, and there's just really no getting out of that. You're an adult, especially if it's something you're paying for, something you're doing with, what little free time you have. You got a job, you got a family, you don't have a lot of spare hours in the day. If you're using part of those to go to yet another school, you want to make the best use of your time. So that's the difference between maybe learning Spanish or French or any other language when you're in high school and learning it as an adult. You're an adult, you're doing it because it's a thing you want to do, it's a thing you want to learn, and you are taking your valuable time and take a little bit of money, and you're going out and you're doing that on your own dime, as they say, and of your own volition. So you want to learn in the most efficient way possible. Castalia Language Center, you can find out more about it, first of all, at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Grebel is a native Spanish speaker. She's from Argentina. She runs Castalia Language Center, and they teach adult functional conversational Spanish. It means they're not teaching you about the history of the language. You don't have to sit there and know what a gerund is or something. You're just learning how to use Spanish in daily life, which is really, the bottom line is that's what you want, because if you can speak Spanish, you can do all the other stuff yourself. You can teach yourself about the history of the language if you can speak it. And they can also adapt to whatever your schedule is, so at different times, different hours, and of course, whether you are speaking it as a beginner or an intermediate level, or if you are an advanced Spanish speaker, you just want to gloss up on it before you go traveling,
and we move somewhere, you can do that as well. You can find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. That is how you get a hold of Castalia Language Center. Please do tell them you heard it here on the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
We're down again.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
I have no idea. That's I'm going to have to go online and look at it then. Okay. So, all right.
Well, if we're going to soldier on forward, let's do the clown watch.
All right. Hold on a sec. Wait. Nope. Somebody says we are now back up.
Okay. There we go.
All right. Well, that is... I will just make this statement that if you're listening to us again on the mobile stream, that is not, that has stayed up the entire time. If you're listening to us in the future, it doesn't really matter. If you're listening to us live, so we apologize for the technical error, unfortunately, and I hate to be this guy, but if you're listening to us via Live 365 right now, which I actually have to say, in all fairness, so we don't like, this doesn't look like we're piling on here, you know, the first few days that we did the show back in June, we just vastly underestimated the number of people, and I'm not saying how great we are, although that clearly is the case. I mean, demonstrably is the case. But I think we really underestimated the amount of people who are going to be listening, and it's just, you know, and it sort of buckled under the weight of that the first few days out of the gate. But since then, I think except for the day where we had the power outage, it's actually been, it's run really well, and it's run in a remarkably stable way. So, anyway, so I'm saying that because I know that there's a lot of people who, you know, listen to the show later on in the day who are sort of not aware that, you know, who don't ever have to experience anything like this firsthand because they're not listening to the show live. That is all a preface to saying that as much as this sounds like a what are you going to do kind of a thing, regrettably, some of that stuff, if you are listening to the show live right now and it's dropping in and out on you, unfortunately, is being done. That is happening in a building that is like far away from us and a thing that we don't really have access to at the moment. So we're going to power through it, but there is not a whole lot we can do. So we have to just kind of plunge on ahead because it's not really – that cannot be fixed at this point in time.
And as per Bruce Agler, since we dropped out through the first half of the Castalia spot, we should mention her again before the end of the show. Too.
I will I'll drop in again, Castalia thing, before we get to the top. And again, we are aware of the problem. We are working to fix it. But that is a that is the thing that Dawn and I, unfortunately – or fortunately, because we're just children basically, they shield us from the technical goings on here. But Bruce Agler and Thomas Giller, you know, the guys who sort of are on the case with that. So anyway, so they're looking into it. We're just going to keep bumping our gums because it's our only real skill. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Clown Watch.
Here's your Clown Watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. I say stalling ever so slightly so I can bring up the Clown Watch sounder, which is right here, kids. Here's Dawn Taylor with your Clown Watch for Wednesday.
He is known to children across Britain's Midlands region as Baldy the Clown, a man in a jazzy suit and oversized red shoes who tells jokes and shapes balloons. But today, the man behind the act, children's entertainer Kevin Davies, says his career is in tatters after he was convicted of benefit fraud. The 44-year-old was caught pocketing the money he earned from children's parties while also claiming almost £5,000 in income support that he wasn't entitled to. Dressed more soberly in a white shirt and black trousers, he admitted in court to failing to notify the Department of Work and Pensions that he was working as a clown between October 2008 and October 2009. Catherine McTeague, prosecuting, told the magistrate's court that his unlawful payments added up to £4,777. Davies said after his appearance, "I'd built up a good reputation as a clown. Now it's in tatters. I've worked for several charities. I just made a mistake." The court was told that behind his cheerful persona as Baldy, Davies had money problems and had borrowed money from loan sharks. John Rowe, defending, said they were less than reputable people who wanted their money back quickly and put him under pressure.
Now he's tatters the clown.
Davies of Wednesfield admitted benefit fraud. The court heard he was paying back the overpayment at the rate of £10 a week. District Judge Graham Wilkinson rebuked him for working as a children's entertainer while stealing from the taxpayer.
Shame, sir. You ought to be ashamed.
He told him the court will not tolerate those who regard the public purse as an extra income.
Please tell me they made the obligatory, like, clowning around with, you know, our money or pensions, something, something.
No. But he does have to do 100 hours of community service, apparently, as a clown. And the judge said, maybe the probation service can put your skills to good use.
Fantastic. I think that here's the deal. Is like with a guy like that, you would think he would have nothing to lose by going to court in the clown outfit. You know what I mean? Because it's like they're already going to nail him, you know, for basically what is essentially tax evasion and fraud, you know, regardless. So it's like, who knows? If he's a beloved children's figure, maybe, you know, whoever it is, the magistrate or whoever it is that sits on the court, one of the powdered wig guys, grew up watching him. And we'd say, you know, this court does not find it in its heart to punish Baldy. Sentence minimized, you know, and hit the...
Or it could be a magistrate who's like me and is terrified of clowns and just goes...
Electric chair!
Yes. Firing squad, kill him!
Hung by the heels until you are dead, dead, dead. There's your clown watch. Press in between stones. Now, that is your clown watch. So what we'll do is we will get here in a few minutes, probably Kelly Clark. And then we will endeavor to get the top five. And then you're going to be on Ham-Fisted Radio.
I am indeed.
This afternoon. What can people expect on tonight's fine installment of Ham-Fisted Radio, which happens at 4 o'clock at PDX.fm?
We will be visiting with Dave Helfrey, who is better known as Baron Von Gulo from Fright Town. And he's going to be talking about the behind-the-scenes work at putting together a spook house.
By the way, I just have to tell you, that if anybody has not been to Fright Town, I myself had not been there because I just... It was that thing where I thought, you know... I went to a spook house once when I was a kid, and weren't so scary. And I just thought, you know, and that was like the end of it. I figured that haunted houses. I did the old guy thing of just figuring that technology had evolved like to a certain point, and then just never went beyond that. And I mean, one of the most overused cliches, like in all of broadcasting and advertising, is to say like, "This isn't your father's," blah blah blah, to the point that I don't even remember where that phrase comes from. Frankly, I know that it was like. It was an ad for a car or something. It was like a Cadillac. Like, it's not your father's Cadillac, maybe.
But I think the phrase existed before that.
But it's one of those things that doesn't mean anything anymore. But it really is not like... I went to Fright Town last year with Sarah and Greg, and Baron Von Gulo gave us a... Dave Helfer gave us a what they call a lights-up tour, which is where... You know, where it's not on and active. You basically, it's like a behind-the-scenes tour where the big overhead fluorescent lights are on, and you see guys like putting the finishing touches on the rooms, and people aren't in costume, and he's showing us like, and here's the thing that does this, and here's a spring that, and here's a thing that descends on you, and here's a terrifying trapdoor you won't, you know, and here's a doll which, you know, unbelievably will, you know, and it's like, I have to tell you, and this is no lie, I wouldn't say this if it wasn't true. I swear to Christ, even with the lights on, I'm getting chills actually thinking about it, with the lights up and on, and with Dave, you know, Baron Von Gulo, just being in like flannel or something, walking us through, and literally you're just seeing a guy with like plumber's crack and like a tool belt going, like drilling a skull onto the wall and mounting it. Like they're literally still putting the finishing touches on the place. It was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. Yeah. Like, and it wasn't turned on. That's the thing. Like, it wasn't even... They hadn't even activated it. And again, I can't overstate this enough. All of the lights were on. I mean, it was lit like you were inside a doctor's office, and it was still mind-bogglingly terrifying.
Yeah, when I first bought my house and I hadn't moved much furniture into it, I let Dave use my house for a Halloween party.
No.
And
bad evil
and
spirits.
It was a really he's been making these things and doing these things for a long time. He used to be in advertising, and he still works as a freelance illustrator and art director, and he's just really excellent at making scary clown things and stuff like that. And they moved everything out, but there was this one piece that was down in my basement that people were going down to the basement to look at that was too heavy and awkward to move out right away. And I kept forgetting it was in my basement, and I'd go down the basement stairs, and it was basically a full-size kind of mannequin, like a guy sitting in a chair. And it was motor operated, but it wasn't, thankfully, all the time. But he was the gimmick was he was holding a ventriloquist dummy that was bashing the guy's head in with a hammer who was holding the ventriloquist dummy. And it had been actually motorized. But I'd forget it was down there, and I'd go to put something in the basement or get something in the basement, dum-da-dum down the street, and there's like this scary guy with a ventriloquist dummy sitting in my basement. So
I don't want to.
I was so happy when they took that away.
They did this thing, and I don't know how much they repeat stuff each year, but I have to tell you, when they walked us through, it was Sarah and Greg and myself and a couple of listeners who had won the sort of, you know, they'd won the prize of walking through and getting this lights up tour. When we were at Fright Town last year, he walked us through. There was this room, and there's not even a spoiler. It like there's no way I could spoil anything for you because I could show you pictures of it and it wouldn't spoil it. It was just a room that was filled with nothing but dolls. And again, and we'll talk about this more because we're going to try to get him on this show, I think. And it's just, he really is just like the coolest guy. But there's a room filled with nothing but dolls. And because it is a place put together by artists and not like, you know, just some carny hack, it's got that great thing. It's got the thing I love so much where something is disturbing for reasons that you can't really identify right off. And it takes you a while. And if he hadn't pointed some of this stuff out, I don't think I would have realized it. But like there was this room full of nothing but dolls. And it's not like they were, I mean, they were just like regular dolls. It's not like they were dolls of Satan. They were just, you know, just like, you know, dolls that like some, you know, like a child would have. But it's like there was one shelf where all of the dolls, he pointed out to me later, all of the dolls had mouths that were like 30% bigger than they should have been. Which is a thing that doesn't sound creepy until you see it. There was a doll, looked normal in every single way except on her hands. She didn't have fingers. She just had 10 thumbs. There was another doll that had a really, really huge, like absurdly happy, big, smiling face, which would have been great if she hadn't had a plastic bag knotted around her head. And that was it. There was nothing else wrong with it all. Just a big plastic bag and then her going, hi, inside. Jesus. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson program, I say, answering the phone and hoping that I am correct, Ms. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Hi there.
Hey there, how you doing?
I'm a genius. I didn't even know this was you. Let me ask you real quickly.
It was impressive.
It's a sort of a Kreskin-like skill I have. Is this the number from which you usually call?
No, this is not. This is the Willamette Week. I don't know. I'm in the room that's kind of like a photo studio / junk room. So it's the junk room phone.
Okay, I was just going to. I was wondering whether I should whether I should label this phone number on the phone so that I knew when this number rang it was you. But I won't bother to do that. Don't you worry.
I like to keep it spicy. I like to keep it interesting.
So it's just sort of it's a little bit of Kelly Roulette. You know, it could be you, could be a homeless guy who's just jabbing random numbers in a payphone somewhere.
And really, what's the difference?
Really, indeed. I'm going to ask you about something now. You're very gracious about this, that you will actually, you and Cheryl talk before your appearance on the show, and you kind of let her know what you're going to be talking about so that I can, as she sometimes, you know, she'll put it in her own charming way, like, you just get to the goddamn point where I don't just babble on and on. Sometimes that makes a lot of sense, and sometimes it doesn't. Like, when I'm looking here, and it says, Kelly will be talking about, and it lists a few other things, and it says, also, a food cart that just serves balls. I don't know what that means.
It serves balls, Rick. What part of that do you not understand?
Okay, maybe I should be more specific.
Do you not enjoy eating balls?
Well, I suppose. I mean, it's all about being in a safe environment with that kind of a thing. Please to be more specific. What are you? This is the place on Belmont, right?
Yep, there is a new food cart pod called Good Food Here, which I don't know if I like the name yet or not, but it's got amazing carts in it, and one of the carts is Lucille's Balls, which serves meatballs and vegan balls.
Now, say a vegan ball, I always automatically assume that that is like a tofu sort of a thing, I guess, because that's what I was raised to think vegan food was. But
these are actually better. They're like a little bean and spinach mix. And they're light and they're crunchy. It's kind of like a weird, it's kind of like a creamier falafel kind of thing. So they're pretty delicious. And so we've got Lucille's balls, which she enjoys meatballs and non-meatballs. And then you kind of, you pick a starch and then you add a sauce. So you get like a puttanesca sauce. You can get a polenta on the side and have a happy little ball party.
Now, here's the thing about the food carts is they've decided to, they've started branching out into foods that you wouldn't traditionally think of as being, you know, like cartable in the sense that it's not like your typical just like your hot dog or your hamburger, and also foods that you wouldn't necessarily think they're big enough market for, because in addition to the balls, it's either Lucille's or possibly somebody else in the pub where they actually have like a fried sardine thing going on.
Yeah, that's Eurotrash, which I haven't tried these yet, but Brian, the guy who reviewed them, has been talking about them for 3 days. It's a Spanish sardine, and they bread it and deep fry it, and apparently it's delicious, which why wouldn't it be? I mean, it's oily and greasy and delicious and oh, so good. There's also a cart called Creme de la Creme that serves escargot.
Well, see, and I got to say that while my experience with escargot has been very limited, I think I've tried it like once or twice, and I was just sort of indifferent to it. The sardines, I've always felt that sardines have gotten kind of a bad rap. The sardines are like anchovies, and it is one of those things that everybody will say they do. Fine, but, you know, whatever you get, just don't get any anchovies on that pizza. And you just want to, like, turn to the guy like, I'm not going to. No one ever does. That's a thing that you've never had. No one has ever brought you a pizza. Shut up. But, like, sardines, too, people will have this reaction to them without ever having had them. And they're actually quite good. And Dawn is nodding her head. You're on board with the sardine love.
Well, yeah. And actually, we've I ate a bunch of sardines a few years ago because there was a big push to get sardines into restaurants because we were having a big run on sardines.
Right.
And yeah, they can be cooked up in many ways that they are quite tasty.
What is
pickled sardines are great. Are you kidding me?
What is and I'm hoping I pronounce this right, is it mortadella?
Mortadella? Yeah.
What is that? What is a mortadella sandwich? That's one of the other things you're talking about in the new Willamette.
Yeah, it sounds like a zombie thing, but mortadella is basically highfalutin bologna. You know, it's similar to bologna. It's a soft pressed meat product, and it's delicious. So
okay.
I haven't had this one, but I've had, that's at Lardo, and it's on Flirtily Ciabatta, which is a bread that makes everything good, and it's from Amani Mortadella. So you've got a lot of great things going on there, and if you put them together in a sandwich, they probably would inspire devotion. This cart pod is full of just ridiculous stuff. I mean, it's just like every different kind of ethnic cuisine you could want, and then weird sardines and balls. I mean, really, our food cart culture is just getting out of control.
I would be curious to see some sort of like a graph over the next, I don't know, maybe starting last year and going through 2017, and just tracking the weight and like cholesterol count of the average Portlander, and then maybe on like a Google hybrid map that then shows how far they live or work from various food carts, and just seeing if we have some sort of like a thrombosis chart that just, suddenly spikes in about a year and a half as this lodges in everybody's heart. Not that it's not a good way to go, I'm just saying.
Yeah, pretty much. God help you if you live anywhere near Big Ass Sandwich.
Seriously,
I just ate their chowder for lunch.
Now, see, when did they start serving chowder? Is that like a recent? Is that like this week or something?
That's this week's special. Is Brian's making his own crab and clam chowder from scratch?
Oh my gosh!
And you get like a cup that I swear is like a pint of it, and then they give you the ciabatta roll on the side with it, and it is hands down, and I'm not exaggerating, it is hands down the best chowder I have ever had, and it's from a cart.
I must have this chowder. I just got back from a really amazing restaurant, and now, like, no matter how good what I just had was, I feel like just leaving, turning right back around, getting in my car, and going and getting chowder.
Maybe somebody should
I'm fat, apparently, and disgusting.
Maybe somebody should just open like a vomitorium cart, you know, sort of a, like a receptacle between pods, just sort of, just for those who really want to enjoy life. They really want to live it to its Roman fullness. Real quickly, you got a busy day. New issue of Willamette is out, and then Aaron Mesh reviews the new Wall Street film, which I don't want to spoil anything, but apparently it's terrible and ill-advised as far as sequels and/or movies and/or just nouns at all go.
He says it's just terrible, horrible. I mean, words came out of his mouth. I mean, when he was trying to explain how much he couldn't stand it, I mean, Aaron was at a loss for words, and that never happens. The way he explains it is that it has a 5-minute motorcycle race in the middle of it, and also the love theme is by David Byrne.
Wow, really?
Which he holds up as two examples of things that are wrong with it. But overall, just terrible. Terrible. Also, he reviewed the movie about owls this week, which he also hates.
What is the movie about owls?
You know what? I'm going to try to read this. It's The Legend of the Guardians, The Owls of Gahool. Have you heard of this yet?
Dawn, Legend of the Guardian, Owls, anything?
I feel bad. I actually did miss the screening for this. I understand, though, you will believe an owl can fly.
Not only fly, but that owl will fly, don a metal helmet, don like spikes on his talons, and then kill another owl.
Yeah, apparently.
And this is a kid's movie.
Yeah, apparently when they armor up, they actually have daggers on their belts, and which kind of makes you wonder, how does an owl use a dagger?
I have no idea what's going on. Is this like a...
Okay, a little bit of background. This is a kid's movie. It's a, it's just CGI movie, really amazing animation effects, but it's directed by Zack Snyder, the guy behind 300 and Watchmen.
Okay, it all makes sense now.
So the slow-mo and the screaming and, the rain bouncing off, like the sort of like the super gay porny, like naked men and the crazy ultraviolence. Apparently, it's all in this movie, except with owls.
Wow. So this is it's like the Glengarry Glen Ross in 30 Seconds by Bunnies, except it's 390 minutes
pretty
with
much.
Owls. All right. Okay.
And see, the sad thing is, Aaron keeps telling me how horrible it is, and everything he's saying to me just makes me want to see it
Seriously.
More and more. Like, I am pretty much convinced that this is the best movie that's ever been made.
To see it and to maybe pick
There's
up a owls. And like to pick up a drug habit before you go see it too, because it sounds like that's the only thing that could make it more awesome. I see this in The Happening in a double bill. All right.
It'd be mad.
The new Willamette Week is on stands now. Read her in print in the Willamette Week or online at WWeek.com. You actually have to come visit us in the studio again one of these days.
Absolutely. Sometime very soon.
All
right. I hope I'm there for snack food day.
Yeah. Well, we're going to start doing that like maybe not every Friday right away. I don't know that our bodies can really take that. But at some point, we're going to start rolling out like maybe an every other Friday, like trash food kind of a thing. Because, I mean, it's just it's us. It's, you know, it's what we do. So, actually,
I got to get off the phone. I got to go get my chowder.
All right. Seriously. See you now. All right, there you go. That's Kelly Clark. There you go. That's my bad owl noise. I really don't know what else.
Sounded kind of like your monkey.
Yeah, they all kind of sound the same. Let's see. I've got a couple of things here. Subject line of this email is, quote, "This is the sort of thing no one cares about," quote, "is my cue to weigh in," says Adam, the Emerson News Network grammarian. The ing suffix represents the gerund form. That's funny because I actually was making fun of gerunds later and said, "I'm not going to learn what a gerund is. That's stupid."
And yet you did.
Gerunds are present participle verbs, such as throwing a baseball, which may constitute a verbal phrase that acts as a noun. Throwing a baseball is fundamental to the game, for example. Not caring is how stupid people render their ignorance less traumatizing. Signed by some people, he means me, by the way. By stupid people, that's me. Adam, Emerson News Network grammarian. Let's see. I will not discuss Sons of Anarchy right now. A, because you're not watching this season. B, because Seamus, who is watching this season, is a big slack ass, and it didn't watch it last night. Here's what Seamus says, because I sent him an email last night, and this is not a spoiler.
Okay.
I sent him a one-line email after last night's Sons of Anarchy, which was great, which features a cameo by Stephen King, being just as creepy and awesome. My email just went, "Stephen King is freaking awesome, Rick," and I just sent it off. And Seamus says, "Damn it, I forgot all about the show because I was playing... because I was playing a 12-hour session of Civilization V, which just came out. I'm downloading the show right now to catch up." He said, "I'm also fell behind a madman. I'm catching up on that today." So when you watched Sons of Anarchy last night, Season 3, Episode 3, you're going to see a cameo by Stephen King playing a creepy guy. Which you think, like, you know, well, okay, he just shows up and he's Stephen King. And the thing is, I knew he was playing a cameo this season. I just didn't know when. And then it's like they just do the reveal of, like, who could that be? And they open the door, and it's like, it's so-and-so. And then he looks up at the camera, and you're like, oh, my God, it's Stephen King. So there you go. All right. It is 2:58. In your estimation, Don, do we have time to do the top five for you got to skedaddle?
Oh, yes, we do.
All right. Well, let's roll it. Here's your top five, by the way, for what is today, Wednesday?
Yes.
Right here in the Rick Emerson Show. And I should say that the top five, like everything today, is brought to you by, among other folks, Castalia Language Center. And Castalia Language Center, they will... they will help you learn and, you know, I was going to make a gerund joke, but it seems like now I'm not allowed to do that because he sort of taught me, but then I've already half forgotten it again.
They'll learn you to talk smart no matter how dumb you are.
They'll learn you to talk pretty in myriad languages. They offer Spanish language classes for adults, and they do so at a downtown facility. They limit their class sizes to only 8 people, and they can adjust to your schedule whatever day and hour you might find yourself free, whether you're a beginning Spanish speaker, whether you're an intermediate Spanish speaker, or whether you're just, you know, you speak it to some advanced degree, but you want to polish up before you, you know, maybe you go traveling, you go on vacation, whatever it is you might be doing. They can tell you all about that at PortlandSpanish.com. They give you all the details, all the facts on that. PortlandSpanish.com. Please do tell them you heard about it here. PortlandSpanish.com. That is how you reach Castalia Language Center. Tell me you heard it on the Emerson News Network. All right, here is Dawn Taylor. Are we prepared for the top five?
I am indeed.
All right, here is your top five for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio
five,
program.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
Excelente. See what I did there? Yeah, that's right.
Muy bueno.
Why must you mock me? Okay, so we were going to do this yesterday, but it followed like an hour of porn conversation. And so we decided it was better to put this off until today. So these are the top five sleaziest songs to receive mainstream radio airplay. And you were saying this is a difficult list to put together, and it was, because there were a lot of them.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, wow, that is quite something to tear off, is that the top five sleaziest.
I mean...
But you did well here, looking them over.
And the thing is, I know the people are saying, I thought Rick Emerson didn't work blue. These songs, improbably enough... were all played on the radio. Most of them were hits. Some of them were hits only on a specific chart, but all of them were radio hits to one degree or another. I mean, it's all... can I just tell you real quickly? Making this top five list, it made me very uncomfortable. Just sitting alone at home putting these together, I felt like this thin sheen of oog all over me. These are the top five sleaziest songs to receive mainstream radio airplay. Don Taylor?
Honorable mention, Prince, Darling Nikki.
But it will not come as a surprise to anybody, by the way, that more than one of these songs was created by our friend Prince. And this is the tamest song on this list.
Which is why it's the honorable mention.
Yeah. But I mean, this song, which was a little notorious when it came out, and which you probably... I don't know if a lot of stations actually even play this now, because, you know, in a post-Janet Jackson world, we had to just expunge all kinds of things from playlists, like, all across the country.
I knew a girl named Nikki, I guess you could say she was a sex fiend. I met her in a hotel lobby, masturbating with magazines.
No one does that. No one masturbates with a magazine in a hotel lobby. I mean, unless you're staying,
Well, there was that guy at the Walmart in the toy department.
Maybe. I was going to say, like, if you're at the Chelsea or something, I suppose. But, I mean, I wonder if this is based on something that, like, happened to Prince. If that just sort of takes place wherever he goes, because he's a magical little sex dwarf. And he just sort of, you know, he walks into a place and suddenly everyone, men, women, everybody, they're just overwhelmed by a sort of carnal desire that cannot be denied.
Nikki started to grind.
Okay.
Excuse me, an unpleasant tingling sensation, Don. We have to... these are the top five sleaziest songs to receive mainstream radio airplay.
Number five, Sheena Easton, Sugar Walls.
Written by?
No, I don't know who.
Prince.
Oh, that's right. Oh, this is a...
Get used to that phrase, by the way.
This is a horrible, appalling song.
Don, for the younger folk out there who maybe weren't around when Sugar Walls was released, mm-hmm. Give them a little explanation about that.
Sugar Walls
yes.
Would be your vagina.
Yes, that's right. She's inviting you, I mean, maybe not you, but maybe you, who knows, to spend the night inside her sugar walls.
Or from whence they come.
Jesus. And it's a place called heaven. This is the song, by the way, that has the line, blood races to your private spots. Ugh.
Yeah.
Admit it. Come inside, Dawn. Come inside. Come inside my sugar walls. I mean, the fact that you could be on the friggin' radio saying, come inside my sugar walls. Hello. It's a vagina. I mean, for the love of God. Ugh. Okay.
Okay.
These are the, and again, we should note again that these all received substantial amounts of radio airplay. These are the top five sleaziest songs to receive mainstream radio airplay. That was only number five. Don Taylor?
Number four, The Rolling Stones, Some Girls. This is sleazy in kind of a good way, though.
It's sleazy in a good way. All right, but here's the thing about this song, is that I don't know when the last time you really... The Rolling Stones excel at doing this thing where they will take these lyrics that really I think everybody would be either offended or shocked by if they listened really closely, but because the lyrics just sort of go by in a wash of like open vowel sounds and murmurs, you don't really notice it. It's like when when Rockstar Supernova was on, and what's her name? One of the contestants sang Brown Sugar. And, you know, the opening line of Brown Sugar is, Gold Coast slave ship bound for cotton fields, sold in the market down in New Orleans. I mean, it's about a ship, like, bringing slaves, who then Mick Jagger Fs with his magical penis.
Yes.
And then later on, you know, he has that the line about the Brown Sugar, yeah, just like a black boy should. So he's, in fact, effing like everybody, like of all races and genders. I guess it's sort of nice when you think about it. It's like everybody gets mixed penis. But no one really thinks about that line when you play the song. This song is notorious for the same reason, and I don't know that we'll have time to get to it here, but later on he goes through a list, Mick does, of various ethnicities of women and their defining traits. Give me all your money, give me your gold, I'll buy you a house in Zuma Beach. He'll get to the line about white girls here in a second.
By the way, listeners suggest that we need a Rick Emerson Show t-shirt that says, "Hello, it's a vagina."
Totally. I'd buy that. French girls want Cartier. Italian girls want cars. American girls want everything in the world you could possibly imagine. I'll skip ahead because we got to move on. But future lines in the song include, white girls, they're pretty funny. Sometimes they drive me mad. This is Mick now. Black girls just want to get effed all night. I don't have that much jam, says Mick.
Oh, that's nice.
Chinese girls are gentle. They're really such a tease, Dawn. You never know what they're cocking inside their silky sleeves. There was a famous protest led about the song by Jesse Jackson, who felt that it was perhaps not the sort of thing American youth ought to be exposed to. But it was a huge hit, and it's probably on KGON, like, right now. These are the top five sleaziest songs to receive radio airplay. Dawn?
Number three, ZZ Top, Pearl Necklace.
What's this about, Dawn?
Funny thing about this song, I really didn't know what this song was about until about 8 years ago.
Really?
I was in the car with my husband, and I don't even remember what the context was. We were talking about music. And if we were talking about ZZ Top or we were talking about sleazy songs or something, and he made some mention about Pearl Necklace, and I went, why? What do you mean? What's that about? I had never actually heard...
You'd never heard the phrase?
That phrase.
Pearl Necklace? Really?
No.
That surprises me. Is this the same Dawn who had an hour-long porn conversation yesterday?
There are some things that have escaped even my encyclopedic knowledge of all things erotic. But yeah, no, I'd never heard that. And so we're in the car. I remember we were on a road trip, and we're driving out to the coast, and we're having this conversation. And I was like, really? That's what it means? Ew!
ZZ Top has an astonishing number of songs, again, that all are played on the radio to this day, that are about things that you could never... This is, by the way, this list is like the next time some old person, which is like my age and up, starts babbling about you kids with your Lady Gaga and your rap and your Two Live Crew, you know, which is, you know, whatever it is that old people are like latching on to, with your chingy or whatever that... Anyway, isn't there a hip hopper named I'd become Tim
maybe,
Riley?
I don't know.
But it's like you listen to this list, and I mean, you know, they're not even being subtle here. But ZZ Top has, you know, they have a song called Tush.
Yeah.
They have a song which they swear is about surfing called Tube Snake Boogie. They claim to this day this song is about jewelry, which is what they say, so it can continue to be played on the radio. I think we're going to get to the lyric here. She was getting bombed and I was getting blown away, Dawn. She held it in her hand, Dawn, and this is what she had to say. She won a pearl necklace, Dawn. A pearl necklace. I was getting blown away. A pearl necklace. There you go. It's just creepy.
Yeah, it is.
It's just creepy.
It is creepy.
All right. These are the top five sleaziest... Did I lie with this list?
No, it's a great, skeezy list.
Sleaziest songs to receive mainstream radio airplay. Dawn Taylor?
Now, number two, I knew this one would have to be on here somewhere. The Divinyls, I Touch Myself.
I had to play this song as a DJ. And I actually like this song quite a lot. Because this this chick, whose name I forget, the lead singer. I used to know her name. Anyway, she's all kinds of hot. She has, like, lips you just want to chew off. The rest of this album was actually not bad. They never really had any other hits. It was almost like, this sounds really dumb, but it was almost like a really, like a quieter sort of sexy AC/DC, the rest of this record. But this was, of course, was a big hit.
Well, as a radio listener in Los Angeles during this time period, listening to K-Rock, rock of the 80s, I got so sick of hearing the song that I hated the song. Mainly just because of just it was in heavy, heavy rotation.
Right. This is one of those songs that I heard on the radio. I think it was on the station where I was working at the time. But I sat there and looked at the radio for a while, thinking, is this an accident? Is someone letting the CD run long because he's in the bathroom? We can't be playing this. Even then, I was horrified by it.
It's like the Cyndi Lauper song, Bebop.
Yeah.
It's the same thing where you listen. I remember listening to that song going, this can't possibly be about what I think it's about.
And yet, you know, and not only is Bebop about masturbation, but it's about masturbating while reading gay porn, you know, in the pages of a Blue Boy magazine. She's getting off. And then the creepy great thing about Bebop is how she is either talking about her boyfriend, her father, or God, depending on the interpretation of the song, when she's like, I hope he will understand, because she was very Catholic. But in the video, they make it very unclear about whether it's her dad or her boyfriend or, you know, Jesus, who will be annoyed that she's, you know, touching herself there. She's getting her Sally Draper on. When I feel down, I want you above me. All right, these are the top five sleaziest songs to receive radio airplay. And because it's been almost 4 minutes since we've had something written by Prince, Dawn, what's number one?
Be Vanity, Pretty Mess.
Do you know this song?
No, I don't think I do.
I'll just give you a few lyrics here up top so you can just sort of be listening for them. Ooh yeah, Don, such a pretty mess. Everything's boiling over, Don. He made such a pretty mess. He made such a pretty mess on my dress.
What is wrong with Prince?
Don, I think you've got what it takes to get me boiling like a kettle.
Did you say something about something cooling on the pillow?
Yeah.
See, this would have been great to lead into the cleaning solution.
Maybe next time. Put this in heavy rotation. I do believe if you boil me bubbling, you get me in so much trouble, Don. Here we go. Here's a little bridge.
She really couldn't sing, could she?
No. That's why she's not a singer anymore. That's why she's a preacher. This is when she was... Wait. And that, like, in 1985, I think, you could just turn on a top 40 radio station in any city in America, and this was just warbling out of the speaker, and Prince was sitting at home on a pile of money laughing. And, you know, I don't know, pleasuring himself, you know, however he does that. We won't even have time to get to the line about how he's pulling on her hair and ripping her seams, Don. All right, there you go. There you go, the top five sleaziest songs to receive radio. But now you know, Donna, knowing is half the battle. All right. All right, don't forget, Dawn Taylor can be heard on Ham Fisted Radio live this afternoon, 4 p.m. at pdx.fm. You can also download it for your listening pleasure. And I have to turn this off. I don't want to hear this.
Please.
That can be downloaded later on at hamfistedradio.com. Be sure to join us tomorrow for another exciting installment of the Rick Emerson Show. And Friday, when our guest will include Mr. Big Jim Willig, who's going to be performing this coming Saturday. And so forth. So tomorrow, another top five. Also tomorrow, Pop Culture Authority and so forth. That is at 1 p.m. And that follows Legion of News, which airs every weekday from noon to 1 over at pdx.fm. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk pack district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor, who I love and respect and admire. And I don't mean that in an Eddie Haskell kind of way.
I love you too.
Oh, that's all not hugs. Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Egler, and Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanako with the Rick Emerson Show, of course, made possible by myriad folks, including y'all, who give us your 32 cent today. And for that, we are truly grateful. I thank you for listening. Without you, of course, there is no us. So thank you for being on out there and spread the word. It is Wednesday, September 22nd, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. We'll see y'all tomorrow at noon for Legion of News, 1 p.m. for this show, and an encore happens in just moments. Keep listening. Thank y'all. See you tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.